Vaughn Wells. Well, you probably remember me as Mary Ann on Gilligan's Island. I am talking to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By, UNC Radio. I'm having a good time. Hope you are. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom to you. Oh, my goodness. Shalom, Dong Wells. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon. I am the founder and the spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York.
And there are a few, aren't there?
Oh, there are so many. I'm one of them most of the time. But I'm going to be beautiful and nice right now because I am talking to the adorable, the delightful Dong Wells. Who, you may ask, is Dong Wells? Well, maybe you don't necessarily know her real name, but if I say that she played Mary Ann on the TV program Gilligan's Island, yes, of course you know who that is. She also, yes, she did some other things. She was in Love, Loss, and What I Wore off Broadway. She was the spokesperson for Idaho Potatoes for a while. She did, this word is making me blush, but she did the vagina monologues at one point, and she's a world traveler. She's a delight. She's with us on the radio right now. Shalom again. Dong Wells, hello.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Shalom to you. Good morning, Dong Wells. How are you doing?
I'm just doing fine. Busiest year probably I've ever had.
Busy why?
Well, it's the 50th anniversary of Gilligan's Island, so, I mean, you can't believe that I'm alive that length of time, but yes, I have been. And it's the 50th year. In 2014, we went on the air September 22nd. So it's a big one for me. I've got a book that I'm doing, and as a matter of fact, I'm on my way to Vancouver, Washington, because they've restored the SS Minnow.
Oh, my God. Wait. The SS Minnow, was it a prop? Was it an actual ship? What was it?
It was a new ship, I understand, or a pretty much a good one, and they destroyed it. You know, they put holes in it and everything, and now, of course, it's been all redone, and they take kids out for charitable things. It's really just beautiful. So there's a big boat show, so I'm going up for the boat show.
Well, they should put that in the Smithsonian, for goodness, and a couple of coconuts next to it.
And a couple of coconuts, that's right.
Does it feel like 50 years since?
Oh, no, it doesn't. No, and it, you know, because it's never gone off the air, I can't go anywhere in the world and I'm not recognized. So it's alive. It's still alive. It's the longest running show in the history of television. Never been off the air since 1964.
Well, do you get those days? Some days you're like, oh, please, I hope nobody recognizes me. I don't have makeup on. I've got my period, whatever the hell it is. And then other days it's like, oh, how come nobody recognized me today? And then someone does, and it makes your day. Do you have those different polarities?
Not really, because, I think my voice gives me away. And if I don't have makeup on, they wouldn't know who I was anyway. I am greeted with love everywhere, so it's three generations. Excuse me.
But it doesn't bother you, like, if you're in a restaurant and people are like, oh, would you mind, please, could you put down your fork and pick up the pen? Is that okay?
Because people are really polite. You know, I'm not a bad guy. I'm not a real sex symbol that somebody's really coming on. So people are really polite. They loved Mary Ann.
Now, you know? Certainly are a sex symbol in the minds of all of the people who grew up in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and still is on TV today. In fact, I remember, I think on Entertainment Tonight, you were telling the story that you could but couldn't show your belly button on the TV. What was that?
Oh, you couldn't. It was all censors. Everything was censors. You know, the Howells slept in twin beds.
Well,
I mean, gosh knows.
Wait, but did you look at Lovey Howell? Of course they did. No, I'm kidding. But yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, how far we've come or how far we've gone down, I don't know which.
Well, but the thing is, weren't they saying that you could sort of sometimes, it was revealed if you were moving around, but the next shot had to be covered? They have all these.
Yeah, I think so many seconds. I think you could have so many seconds. Same with Tina's cleavage. I think, you know, you could only show 5 seconds of it. I'm making up the time. I don't know what the time was.
They interviewed Sherwood Schwartz, and I am quoting him. They said, between Dong's belly button and Tina's tits, I didn't have a minute's peace.
It's probably true.
Which is probably the truth of also every 15-year-old boy watching Gilligan's Island. But anywho, so let's roll it back. Let's roll it back to Kansas, which I think is where you originally came from.
Wingfield,
Kansas. What? How did you go from being a little tot to being a model, actress, Miss America kind of person? How did that happen?
Actually, Mary Ann came from Wingfield, Kansas. Dawn Wells came from Reno, Nevada.
Oh, see, I'm confusing the two of you still.
I know. No, I'm a fourth generation Nevadan. My great-great-grandfather drove stagecoach during the Gold Rush.
Oh, my God. Wow.
My grandmother played at Piper's Opera House at age 9. She played the piano. So, I mean, I'm a real Western girl.
Now, wait, before you tell anything, let's roll it back even then. I didn't realize this. So, do you have any stories, amazing things about your grandfather or your great-grandfather with a stagecoach?
Great-grandfather.
Great. Any stories about his life, what he did, beyond what he did?
He was held up at Geiger's Grade, which is a mountain pass from the Washoe Valley up to Virginia City. And Virginia City had like 250,000 people. It's all undermined. It's a wonderful ghost town. They're mining gold again. And he was held up by some robbers, and then he took the dignitaries, drove the Golden Spike in Utah. He took them all by horse and buggy, I guess, to the Golden Spike. My grandmother, on my father's side,
yes,
this was my mother's side, grew up in Avery's, California, Calaveras County, where they have the frog jumping contest.
Yes!
Yes, that's where they grew up, and they had a ranch, a farm, and all of the men were out working, and the women were baking pies, and they got held up by Black Bart. And he tied them all up and put them in the basement, robbed them of all their food, and when they got out, he'd left a $50 gold piece on the cloth.
What?
This is only two generations away from me to hear these stories. You know, you East Coasters go back a lot further. The West Coasters are pretty new.
Well, let me tell you something, that at least your family on both sides was held up by people. I was talking a couple of weeks ago to this writer, and everybody on his family from the ancestral side, they were all the bad guys. They were the thieves and the con men and the robbers. At least you were the victims.
I was the victim, that's right.
But okay, so now we roll it forward. You were growing up in Reno, Nevada. I guess there's pageants and beauty things everywhere. Did that give you the idea, hey, I should follow this path?
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh.
I wasn't interested in that at all. My knees dislocated. I wanted to be a ballerina to begin with, but
oh,
I couldn't, because of my knees, couldn't dance. And I was a debater. I didn't do any...
Oh, I was a master debater. Yes, yes.
I was a debater. I love debating. And I wanted to go away to college, and I wanted to go to a women's college, and I went to Stevens College in Missouri, and it was a 2-year school, and I couldn't take any PE because of my knees dislocated, so I took a theater course, and my professor said, oh, you ought to major in this. I said, no, I don't want to be an out-of-work actor. I was very interested in medicine. I wanted to be a pediatric surgeon.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I loved chemistry. I loved all of that, but I took a theater course, and Stevens was only 2 years at the time, and I had to decide where I was going after that, so He tried to talk me into being a theater major, and I wanted medicine, so I took University of Washington in Seattle, which had a great med school and a great theater department.
So if you had not gotten on Gilligan's Island, there might be, like, hundreds of more children who wouldn't have died.
That's right.
Gilligan's Island killed children. You could have been the next Albert Schweitzer, for crying out, the next Jonas Salk.
What a waste.
Oh, instead you're running around with coconuts in a bikini. Well, there's compensation still.
Making a lot of kids laugh.
Do you remember the plays or musicals that you did in university?
Oh, yeah, but I didn't do many musicals because I don't sing. I did The Boyfriend.
Oh, okay. Were you, what was that, the roles of Sandy Duncan role, whatever?
Well, I don't remember which character she plays, but...
the lead, the, you know.
Yeah, but that was the only musical I ever did.
So what plays
were... I did a lot of theater, and I've done theater since. I mean, I love theater. That's one of the reasons I think I went to work right away. I gave myself a year, and I said, if I don't get a job, I analyzed where I was going, either New York or Los Angeles. You know, you don't just wander around. I never wanted to be in the movies, any of that stuff.
You never wanted to be in the movies?
No, I didn't have any desire to be an actress when I went away to school.
Okay, that's fair.
Oh, you know, I didn't, and I liked it, and I was pretty good at it, so I thought, I'll give myself a year. If I don't get work, I'll go back to med school. So I was a perfect type. And after I was Miss Nevada, I didn't mention it after the first or second time because everybody thinks they want to be in the movies and they're beautiful and all of that. That wasn't it with me. So I stopped mentioning that I was Miss Nevada, but I was very well trained. And not only that, Stevens College gave me sort of a sense of independence. I remember Jack Warner saying to my agent, I had a conversation with this woman. We really sat down and had a conversation. Like, most girls can't, you know, they come in and smile. So it really, my training paid off. And when I came into Los Angeles, I chose L.A. instead of New York because I don't sing. Thought musical comedy was there. And
right.
I came to L.A. and got an agent right away and went to work right away because I was a perfect type and very well trained.
Well, what were some of your first jobs?
Well, Warner Brothers put me under option for contract, so I did all their shows. And in that day and age, you couldn't see what you looked like on camera. There was no instant replay, no DVDs or anything like that. You had to wait till it aired, which was usually 6 to 9 weeks after you filmed it. So the first couple of episodes, I was blinking a lot. I didn't know it because of the the lights, you know.
Well, my first couple of episodes of...
I did 77 Sunset Strip, I did Hawaiian Eye, I did Maverick, Cheyenne, Wild Wild West, Lawman.
So you're in a lot of these Westerns. Do you have any memory?
Oh, I got a lot of, yeah, I'm a Western girl. I have a lot of Western stuff.
First, this was still now, this would have been post, like, the 1950s golden age of the live TV. You never did any of that. This was already pre-taped, you know, videoed 1960s.
Actually, Gilligan's Island was film.
Film, that's right. But do you have any, before we get to Gilligan, do you have any memories or stories of the people that you worked with in some of these other shows, the 77 Sunset Strip, the Maverick, any of that?
Well, yeah, and I met Barb Reed, and I did a movie called The New Interns, and it was my first film, I think. Can't remember, but I wasn't under option to Warner Brothers then. And John Rich directed it, who ended up directing a lot of Gilligan's. And it was Barbara Eden and Stephanie Powers and Kojak, what was his name? Telly Savalas.
Telly Savalas. Do you have hair then?
Yeah, a little bit. Greg Morris.
Greg Morris.
Mission Impossible.
Oh, sorry. Of course, yes.
So Barbara Eden and I played bridge for years.
Okay.
But that was kind of my first stuff. And then Warner Brothers was all the... You know, Jack Kelly and Connie Stevens and Eddie Burns and Chad Everett.
Well, do you have any specific, like, funny or memorable anecdotes about these people? And one thing I love is, you know, people drop names and people they've worked with, and they say the name, and it's kind of cool, but we'd love to hear stories or thoughts or memories or little jokes or anything about these people.
There's a kind of a cute story with Russell Johnson and I, the professor and I. And Jack Palance, you know who Jack Palance is?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Such a tough-looking guy.
Yeah.
You're afraid of him. If you don't know him at all, you're afraid of him anyway.
He was in the Billy Crystal movie that was, what was the name of it? The go become ranch hands.
City Slickers,
thank you so much. Anyway, yes, Jack Palance, Russell Johnson, who played the professor.
For personal appearance at Folsom Prison, which is maximum security.
Wait, I'm sorry, what about Folsom Prison?
We were doing a personal appearance.
Oh, God, yeah.
About eight or nine of us, and I don't know why we were doing it, but we were. And I'd never been to a prison before. And it's all heavy-duty stuff, you know?
Yes.
The worst criminals there are. And Jack Palance went on first, and then I came out, and of course, everybody went nuts. Of course, everybody's a locked-up man.
Right, well, yes. Although some probably went nuts for Jack Palance. I mean, it was prison, 10% of the population. But anyway, yes.
Just as the professor was walking out to me, some guy yelled out, "I'll take her!" And some guy yelled out, "I'll take him!" And Russell just turned right around and walked right off.
Oh.
He said, "I'm not going to stand out there any longer."
Well, I mean, there were guards everywhere. And, you wouldn't have gotten, still. Wow.
It is kind of terrifying when all these mass murderers are, 2,000 of them looking at you.
Now, remember that 97% of the people in these prisons, they're there for the wrong reasons. They have the bad lawyers. They're all innocent somehow. They've been convicted, but they're all innocent. Let's give them that. Anywho, we are guilty of talking with Dawn Wells, the lovely and delightful actress from Gilligan's Island. We've now, I guess, moved into Gilligan's Island memories. So we've talked about Russell Johnson, who played the professor. I think you've said before that your favorite episode was where you're playing the Cockney girl. Why is this?
Well, because we got to do something else other than just those simple characters. It was fun to play an accent, and it was fun to be in different costumes. Yeah, we liked the dream sequences. That was the most fun, I think.
Cool. And I think Harold Hecuba, that's probably my favorite because it's so theatrical. And do you have any recollection of working with Phil Silvers?
He just was mad.
Mad angry or mad crazy?
Mad, just crazy. Yeah, he was. And you know how stupid I am? I didn't realize until about 3 months ago. Warner Brothers is about to do the film, I think. And his production company was one of the... I guess, shared the ownership with Sherwin-Schwartz. And his production company was Gladysia. I was thinking like Gladiola, Gladysia, and I just realized his his gimmick was Gladysia.
Gladysia, glad that was his little, little shtick.
I just figured that out about 2 months ago. I'm a little slow.
Little bit. Well, you know, some of the actors on Gilligan's Island, you tell the story, I think, also on Entertainment Tonight, but it's pretty funny. They thought momentarily that you, sweet, adorable, darling Marianne slash Dawn Wells, was doing cocaine.
Oh,
why?
No.
Why is this?
That was so funny because I wore little temporary caps on the two teeth next to my front teeth. I looked like a little beaver without the caps. My front teeth were longer.
Right.
I have sensed at age 55 I went and had my teeth straightened, had them pulled down. But anyway, I wore these little temporary caps, and I kept them in a little vial because they just slipped on and off when I worked. If I would forget and leave them on, I'd have a piece of gum or something and chew them up. So I always kept them in this little vial glass, tucked in my cleavage in a bra a little bit. And when I'd rehearse without them, and then they'd say it's time to shoot. So I'd turn around, put my teeth in, and turn back. Well, when we were doing this special, all the people, one of the rescues or whatever, we had a big audience. And finally, the stage manager came up to me and he said, would you please just, when you put your teeth in, would you do it facing the audience? Because they see you turn around, you do something with your mouth, then you turn around and you smile. Like you have just sniffed cocaine. And they're asking, is she shooting up cocaine or however you do it, smoking or sniffing or whatever? So now I had to put my teeth on in front of everybody.
It was just you putting your teeth in. I think that's hysterical. And the other irony, I mean, we might as well get to this now since we're talking about the substance thing, is that you had that, this is many years later, you had that crazy arrest for pot. And the funny thing is this show is coming out of Colorado now, so it would be completely legal.
It's so real. Yeah, it could be legal, but it wasn't even mine. I mean, and it took me, I don't know how long to discover that the sheriff had put out the fact that they had arrested me to every single radio and television station in the state of Idaho.
Was he just looking for press, or was he a hard ass about drugs, and he thought, aha, if we show the world that Marianne smokes pot, this will be a lesson to the kid. I mean, what was his motive?
I have no idea. I have no idea other than that I'm famous. I have no idea.
Have you ever picked up any hitchhikers since?
I didn't finish picking up a hitchhiker then. It was a company car. Somebody had my car all day long. And there were two little roaches in a box in the glove compartment.
Well, that's amazing. And it really would be nothing now in Colorado. Honest to gosh.
Well, I don't know. But either way, I was running a school. I didn't want anybody smoking drugs in my car. I didn't want to. I didn't do it. And I was actually kind of interested in what the jail looked like. I'd never seen that before. You know?
Okay.
And, of course, the jail was about as big as somebody's bathroom. There were two guys that they had arrested, but they didn't know where they lived because everything's a country road. He said, I don't know, you just go up here, and then you turn left, and then you turn right. And I don't know. It was quite an experience for me, and I wasn't concerned because I know it wasn't mine until the press gets a hold of it. Then you can't, you know, all that crap that they put in the Inquirer and stuff, 85% of it's not true about anybody.
Well, we know, yeah, everybody knows this, but then were charges dismissed? What happened finally with the whole thing?
The kid who it was spent 2 days in a little jail in Rexburg.
Oh wow! So they actually did get the people, and you were completely exonerated and all of that. So have you ever actually tried pot or cocaine or anything? I mean, you were in Hollywood. I would imagine you would have had.
I have tried marijuana, but that's all. I've only tried it once or twice. Anything that alters my mind, it terrifies me.
Oh, I can't even eat mashed potatoes because. It makes me goofy. Now, speaking of mashed potatoes...
Yes, have you seen my video? You need to Google Dawn Wells Potato on your internet.
Dawn Wells Potato. Well, explain to people how you got connected. Since if you were born in Nevada and Marianne had to do with Kansas, why are you involved with Idaho Spud's Potatoes?
Well, my parents were divorced, and my father lived in Las Vegas, and he was a wild fisherman. And he had a cabin up in Driggs, Idaho, which is right over the pass from Jackson Hole. So from the time I was nine, I'm a really good fly fisherman. I've been up there fishing. So when I decided I wanted to open a camp about teaching how to get into the business, you know, contracts and acting and marketing yourself and all that kind of stuff in a retreat. And I thought, here's a beautiful place at the foot of the Teton Mountains. It's gorgeous. So I bought a house and actually the first year made it his and hers dorm and had a chef.
Oh.
And some teachers, and I brought people up from L.A., voiceover teachers, directors, casting directors, and I taught some too. And then I expanded and rented a lodge sort of up in the mountains a little bit. But it was a kind of a big teepee. It was wonderful.
Wow, but wait, I'm still...
And I had a family film festival. We brought in filmmakers teaching filmmakers how to make films while actors were acting.
Nice.
It was nice. It was a film actors boot camp. And then we did a film festival at the Spud Drive-In, which is the oldest drive-in in the country.
Oh, is it still extant? Is it still there?
Yep, still there.
Wow.
And we have film family film festivals with the filmmakers coming in with their films.
And so that's how you kind of got allied with the Spuds and the I Go Potato. That's right. Hey, Google Dawn Wells and Potato. This has got me unbelievable.
They were my sponsor. They were the first sponsor I called on. And they were with us the whole time. They were wonderful people. Really wonderful.
Now, one of the things that you know, you say that you buy houses and you create these things and these schools and these culinary things. And it means that, thank God, you're all set. You have money because you, unlike some of the other Gilligan's Island cast people, had a good deal. As far as residuals, what happened with that?
He had no residuals whatsoever. Oh, I'm sorry. I think we got paid for the first. I think we all made a total of about $50,000 each. I mean, it didn't exist then.
So wait, you don't get anything?
No, nothing.
Well, I mean, I guess if you go to personal appearances and signings and the card collector things, then of course they pay you, you know, well. But for the Wow, I thought you had...
No, I mean, we're the longest running show in the history of television. We've never been off the air. I did a thing for CBS calling TV moguls, and the report that I was given to report was that Sherwood Schwartz made $90 million on the Gilligan's Island reruns alone, not considering the production, and he did Brady Bunch. I mean, $90 million, he could have split $1 million between the seven of us.
Hell yeah.
Jim Backus was very bitter about it, and I said, how can you be? It wasn't the law then.
Well, right. I mean, you pay what you're at, you know, I guess. You should have gotten nice Christmas presents or something, or Hanukkah presents, I should say.
No, we didn't.
And so, but then how did you make, with all due respect, how did you make out so well since Gilligan's Island?
I've never stopped working.
Oh.
I've been working constantly. I went right back to the stage after Gilligan's Island because I didn't want to play that little farm girl for long, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, did you play? This is going to amaze people. Now, this woman who had to cover her belly button, this woman was the prim and proper Marianne, I think to take the whole thing 180 degrees the other way. You were in The Owl and the Pussycat.
Oh, I know. It was my favorite thing. That's one of the first things I did. I played a hooker. But I played her very sweet. She was... Just happened to be a lady of the evening.
All right, well.
One of the funniest plays ever written. Much funnier than the movie. Oh, I think he's only written two plays. It had to be his life. The curtain lines in the second act, the five quick scenes. Oh, I mean, I have such memories of it. I've done it about 15 times. I love it.
Oh, over the year? I didn't realize.
I could be an old hooker now. I could do it.
So could I, let me tell you. I trim my beard. But so do you have any memories of people, actors that you have worked with over the years in theater?
Oh, I have tons of memories.
Well, anecdotes, stories, fun things that happen in doing live performances.
Oh, well, yeah, I did the national tour of their playing our song.
Oh, okay, the Marvin Hamlisch show, and?
And I don't sing.
Oh.
I mean, it almost killed me. It really almost killed me. I worked at it and worked at it and worked at it and worked at it, auditioned twice, and they finally asked me to do the role. And it's a very tough show for a non-singer because it's Hamlisch anyway, which is kind of odd chords, you know? And it's two people a lot of the times.
Who was the fellow? Was it Robert Klein, or who did you have on the...
Richard Rider.
Richard Rider, okay.
And he was just wonderful. He was just wonderful. But, what did I start to say? Something about my singing somewhere.
Oh, well, then you had to do this show and it nearly killed you because you were not, per se, a singer, but you barreled, you toughed your way through it.
Yeah, and it was an interesting experience. I came, I think it was the third or fourth performance. I have two terrible stories. One is the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Oh, yes, here we go.
Here we go, the most embarrassing. My character underdressed everything. She would wear old costumes, you know. So you always had to underdress, because there's quick changes, and you have so you have to underdress all that stuff. So I'm doing, they're playing our song, which is almost a Merry Widow with fringe. It's like a bathing suit with fringe.
Okay.
And I come flying off stage after. Now I'm with 4,000 cadets at West Point doing this. It's about my fourth or fifth performance, and I'm there with, I don't know, 20,000 students, I don't know, men, of course.
Of course.
In their uniforms. And I'm doing they're playing their song, and I come to change clothes, and I take the top off. I haven't put on my tights.
Oh.
I have pantyhose on and nothing else. I have been doing the whole dance with this fringe outfit with no tights.
Oh, did you do any leaps?
I did a lot of spins.
Oh.
And I said, I got a standing ovation at the end. I said, I bet. But had I realized it in the middle of the dance, I'd have had to walk off. I didn't know it until I went to put off my other clothes.
I mean, it's funny, you were worried during Gilligan's Island that you were looking like a beaver. Later on, who knew? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. So what was the other story you wanted to tell?
Well, the other one was when I was first doing the play, we went to San Francisco, and the sound man had left, and the new sound guy had never done sound at a theater, only rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
So it was a big, big theater, and the reviewer hated Neil Simon. Had been in a play, had come to review them, I don't know, two or three plays prior, and had a fight with the manager, and he'd been kicked out.
Oh, boy.
This was the first time he was allowed back in the theater. So he hates Neil Simon. He's come back to the theater with a chip on his shoulder, and the sound guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, okay.
They don't sing, so I need every bit of help I can get. And Richard and I are across from each other on stage. I can't even hear him talking to me. That's how bad the sound was. We have to face each other to hear. So it was really a disaster. It really was a horrible performance. I was horrible, I'm sure. Richard is fine, but who could tell? I couldn't hear him either. So the review was absolutely awful.
But, okay, maybe he wasn't taking it out on you. It was just a bad thing. You knew it was bad.
Everything was bad. Everything. He hated it all. Hated us. Thought we couldn't sing. Couldn't act. Couldn't do anything right. Everything was all wrong.
Oh.
And I've never gotten a review like that, and I've always written a reviewer a thank you note. I mean, even if they don't like you, you can say something, you know? So I thought, what am I going to say to this person? So I wrote him a letter. And I wrote him a letter and said I appreciated his candor and that I was sorry he really had such a terrible time, that it wasn't good for me either. I could barely hear him across the stage. And it was my very first musical, and I was enjoying learning so much. I'm sorry he had such a terrible evening.
Oh.
That's what I said. I got a letter back from him saying,
yes,
your graciousness not only impressed me, but everyone to whom I have shown your letter. Graciousness of not trying to make excuses, whatever he said, was a lovely couple paragraphs. And he said, if you were ever in town doing any other performance anywhere, I'd be delighted to come and see you.
Now, do you remember, what critic was this? Because my friend Dave knows a lot of...
Sure, I have it. It was the San Francisco Examiner.
Was it Bob Hurwit? Maybe? No?
I don't know. Bob sounds kind of familiar to me, but I don't know.
Oh, I'm just curious. Because my friend Dave may know this person. Dave, by the way...
It was such a lovely thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was a lovely thing to do, and I wasn't going to complain. He was right. It was a horrible performance. He was right.
Well, that's what happened. I mean, you know, critics get kind of a bad rap, and sometimes they deserve it, but mostly they go, just like any audience member, even more so, critics want to love what they're seeing. And if they don't, they're angry about it, and that comes out with venom.
I once Barnes, he was at Stevens College speaking, and I got to ride back with him. We were both catching a plane out of St. Louis. And I said, I just have a question. How do you get to be a critic? How does one get to be a critic? And he said, well, I mean, how do we think that you know more about Hamlet than we do, et cetera? He said, well, after you've seen 4,200 productions of Hamlet, you know a good one from a bad one. I went, oh, that makes sense, I guess.
He's right. It's all about experience. There's another critic who writes for the Village Voice, or used to, until they ran out of money, but Michael Feingold once said, it's very easy to be a theater critic. All you have to do is read every play that's ever been written. And then you'll be all ready.
Then you're fine.
Yeah, and he did back then. That's what he did. Anywho, we're going a little far afield here with the delightful Dawn Wells. Of course, we're talking theater with her, even though we know her from Gilligan's Island. But we do have to get back to some Gilligan's Island things. For example, the only remaining living people, as far as I know, from that program are you, Tina Louise, and Russell Johnson is still alive. Are you in touch with them still?
Well, we spoke not very long ago, but he's very hard of hearing. So he doesn't talk on the telephone anymore. And he's 88 or 89, I think.
Yeah, 89 years old now.
Yeah, and he's just my favorite. I just adore him.
Is he in reasonably good, I mean, as far as you know, in decent health?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think just old. He said, I can't hear it, I'm just old. That's all I am.
And what about Tina Louise?
Well, Love Lost when I were off Broadway, and I thought maybe we'd run into each other, but we didn't. I was there for about 6 weeks. But I think she's fine. I don't know whether she's working or not, or wanting to. I have no idea.
Okay. I'm just curious. Are there any others that I'm forgetting that are still part of... I mean, there's crew members and things like that, or directors, but any other...
Bob Denver's son, Patrick, is a special effects guy, and I think he's moving up to New York and going to raise bees, but he does special effects stuff for David Copperfield.
Oh.
And I have run into Alan Hale's granddaughter, whose name is Samantha Hale, and she's stand-up comedy. I spent New Year's Eve listening to her, so I've got a little bit there left, you know, it's kind of nice.
To keep the connections in any way you can. I think that's wonderful and lovely. Oh, by the way, someone, also speaking of television, someone that you toured with in the A.R. Gurney play Love Letters, this nice little epistolary play, was Adam West. Tell us something about...
A couple performances with him.
Oh, just a couple of... And just between Batman and then hearing him on Family Guy, you have to wonder, what is Adam West really like?
I don't think anybody really knows. I think he's always... I have only seen him on a professional level, and he's always just been very handsome and very gracious and, you know, very kind of flirtatious and charming, and I don't know anything about him. We share an agent. But I don't know anything personal about him. I think he lives up in Idaho, kind of out in the country. I don't know. He's a lovely man, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I thought the tour was a bit longer than that. No, but I was just curious about... there's something so mysterious for some reason and puckish about Adam West that I just wanted to know. I wanted to ask you a couple of things also about... there was a play. Dave told me about this. Unfortunately, he did not remember the play. But he knew the playwright, a fellow named Mark Rothman, that...
Oh, Mark Rothman.
Yes, he was a TV writer for The Odd Couple, and then he wrote this play that you were in. There's a videotape of it. What was that?
I just ran into Mark not very long ago, and it was a real long time ago, and I can't even remember the name of the little theater on La Cienega. And I can't even remember who I did it with. One of those sitcom things.
It was a cute little show. I just that Dave mentioned, but it occurred to me to ask about that. You also, Dawn Wells, did briefly, I guess, a talk show in Australia.
I did it. One of called Castaway Correspondence. I interviewed all. I was the foreign press for all our American movies. All the publicity people come, you know, and interview. But also the foreign press does. It's usually separate days. Excuse me.
No, sure, please.
Separate days. So I came with Japan and Germany and blah, 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 because I was Australia. So it's very interesting watching the foreign press watch our movies. Kind of fun.
What did you learn about them?
Well, I learned a lot about, one of them was striptease.
Oh.
With Demi Moore, and you get the mumbling and the grumbling, you know, going on, you know, all of it. I don't know, half of them are other languages. But I got to meet everybody. It was really so much fun, because half of them all grew up with me, you know. And Dick Donner, who was the director of, I don't know.
Wait, Richard Donner?
Richard Donner.
You call him Dick.
Director of Gilligan's Island, lots of them.
Yeah.
And I said to Dick, here you are. I said, I'm reading your resume, Lady Luck or whatever, Die Hard or whatever, all that stuff that you do. I don't see one mention of Gilligan's Island here. And he said, I want to tell you, my fantasy is to move off on one of those little islands off the coast of Seattle and write sitcoms. He said, I would have to go outside when I call action when you guys were shooting, or I'd be laughing too hard.
Oh.
And I remember him, he was very attractive, you know, and I was very new, and he had a trench coat over his shoulder, and he walked with a walking stick and a big German shepherd, and he had a yellow Mercedes. I mean, he's exactly what you would call a director. He was really like he was casting himself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's Hollywood.
And then I sat next to Opie. I said, I'm sorry, that's all I could call you is Opie.
Oh, any memory, any thoughts on Ron Howard? Was he personable? Was he charming? Was he funny?
He was just adorable. Just adorable. The only person who was difficult at all, and I interviewed probably three dozen, was Mel Gibson. He's the only one. And he
gee, what a shock.
He wasn't happy being there. Didn't want to be there. I interviewed him twice.
You should give him three pints of scotch. You would have been fine.
I don't know. He just didn't want to be there.
Well, wait, you're not Jewish, are you?
No.
Oh, you would have been fine. just kidding. Now, moving, we'll just have another minute or two or three with the lovely Dawn Wells. I want to ask a couple of things. First of all, your living situation these days. You were married for a period of time.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been, my husband has passed away, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
We were were divorced in 1967. I lost my father, my husband and I divorced, and the series was canceled, all in May of 1967.
Did you go through a depression period, or did you just be like Mary Ann and buck up and smile?
You just cope.
Yeah.
You know, you just cope. Everybody has things they have to go through.
Well, death of a father is pretty heavy.
I've been single my whole life since then. I was in love and lived in Nashville for quite a while, but not with someone. I don't believe in that. And
Whoa. Were you raised serious Catholic?
No. I just, you either commit or you don't.
Well, you can commit without the piece of paper, can't you?
No, that's not a commitment.
Whoa. Interesting.
I think in different ages, in age brackets, he had children. I mean, I might do something different now at this point in my life. But I had a house. He had a house. I helped raise his girls. As a matter of fact, his granddaughter just adopted a baby. I'm very close to all of them. Because I didn't have children and I had a family. It was wonderful.
Well, no, that is pretty. You got the best of both worlds in some ways.
I go off and work for 6 weeks because I want to go out and do something I want to do and then come home.
But you couldn't, you don't think that would be doable if you were married?
I think it's much harder to say your wife is always out of town.
Mm.
I really do. I think it's much easier for especially in the South.
Oh, Tennessee. So, in the past, let's say, decade or so, have you been dating, meeting people? Do you care anymore?
Yes, of course I do.
Oh, well, what are you looking for in a male person? I'm assuming he's male, yes.
Yes, of course. Well, somebody has to be a real person, a real character with ethics and virtues and responsible and kind and loving and smart. Has to be smart. And I don't mind. I'm not going to even discuss where I am with my relationships right now.
Okay.
That's what I look for. And I've been, you know, I've been very fortunate.
Oh, Mazel McClick, that's great. That's terrific. Okay, this is good. And let's see, I want to zip through my questions. I have to ask. Again, going back to the genius, albeit the parsimonious genius of Sherwood Schwartz, any recollections of the Harlem Globetrotters from Gilligan's Island?
That's a plot, isn't it? How far off could you go? I said, Sherwood, 90 minutes and basketball, please. But they were a wonderful group of people. They were absolutely wonderful, and I'll tell you a darling story.
Oh, good.
I am a chairman of a board of a foundation called the Terry Lee Wells Foundation. It was my cousin, and she's passed away now, but she had adopted a little boy that turned out to be alcohol fetal syndrome child, who was a little slow, having a little difficult time with his life, and she has since lost him. So there is a foundation that I run because of Randy's memory. But she was down here with Randy when he was about 14 during the Harlem Globetrotters filming. So he was on the set. Well, do you know who Geese Osby is?
Oh, my God. Was he one of the original? I mean, I remember from
He was one of the original.
Megalark
Geese. Really,
he was
one of the shortest. Excuse me.
Sure.
Wait, Geese took a shine to Randy and kind of, you know, helped him along and whatever. 7 years later, Terry Lee, my cousin, took Randy to the gym at the University of Nevada in Reno because the Harlem Globetrotters were performing.
Uh-huh.
And they were in the front row, and Geese looks up and says, Randy, walks off the course, comes over and shakes his hand.
Oh, my goodness.
7 years later, never seen him in between. I mean, they were absolutely the nicest group of people. They were really wonderful. The plot was stupid, but
Well, what do you expect? I mean, I will point you. You pointed me towards a Google thing with you and the potatoes. Let me point you towards a Google thing, if you've never seen this, of sort of inspired by Sherwood Schwartz and all that. One of the greatest things ever. Did you ever see the Bob Smigel cartoon on Saturday Night Live of bad children's, like, 1970s TV shows, what would have been? Then there were pilots that never got made. And one of them was Ladysmith Black Mambazo meets the Harlem Globetrotters in outer space. You need to see this.
It's Tell me that name again.
Genius. Ladysmith Black Mambazo, you know, the African band, meets the Harlem Globetrotters in outer space.
Oh, my God.
It's like 2 minutes long. It's just hysterically funny. And absolutely worth your Googling.
I'll go look. I'm not very technically astute, but I'm working on it.
Oh, definitely.
I got my Facebook.
You have a Facebook. What is your Facebook page?
Facebook facebook.com/therealMaryAnn.
The Real Mary Ann. Yay.
Mary Ann is two words, and I have adultwells.com. But I'm traveling and doing an awful lot, and people want to know what I'm doing, so I'm trying to keep up with the Facebook so you know where I am.
When you travel, you're doing personal appearances and things like that, yes?
Appearances. I'm doing Steel Magnolias in March.
Oh, my goodness. Are you playing the McLean? Which character?
Weezer, yes.
Weezer!
Absolutely.
And I forgot, you also at one point played Maggie the Cat in Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
No, that's... I've never done Cat. I've done, what's the Ava Gardner one? Oh, gosh.
Ava Gardner.
But the teacher, Puerto Vallarta.
Oh, wait a minute. That also Tennessee Williams, the that other one where he's in the hammock. Oh,
Ivany.
Suddenly the Sun... What, sorry?
Not Suddenly Last Summer, no.
I think I know the one you're talking about. I am blanking, unfortunately.
Well, I can't think of it. And I just did Lion in Winter.
Oh.
I'm now doing Steel Magnolias. I like to do one or two plays a year.
And you obviously love to travel and do these plays and go all over the place and all over the world. You're an art collector, I think.
Art collector, and I went around the world on the Concorde.
Really?
My cousin Terry took me. She had to have somebody with her all the time. She said, "You want to go?" I said, "Oh, I don't think so." No.
Of course you went.
That was really wonderful. And I've been to Africa 5 times.
What is it about Africa?
Oh, I don't know. I just think that's where we all started. And then I did the Solomon Islands with 5 girls that no white women have ever been before. We canoed from island to island.
Wow.
I've seen the mountain gorillas. And I'm not athletic, but I'm adventuresome.
You obviously are. So what's a place that you've never been that you would still like to go?
I think I'd like to. I always wanted to go to Antarctica. I think I'm kind of over it after these last 2 boat issues.
What happened with the boats?
The boat got, they all got pinned in with the ice. And
oh, I didn't realize. Okay.
Break the ice, and the people who came to rescue them, they got pinned in. I guess you just freeze to death eventually. I don't know.
Well, wait a little while. 5 more years of global warming, you'll just be able to swim there.
That's right. Any minute. Oh, I've never been to the. I've never been to the Nordic. Sweden and all that. I've not been there.
But you've been all over South America, Latin America, Africa.
Oh, I've only been a little bit to Peru.
Oh.
And Colombia, just boat stops. But I didn't get to Machu Picchu. I don't know. I'm pretty happy. I've been to an awful lot of areas. I think that the United States has got some of the most beautiful.
Well, that is true. And also the fact is you're so still young at heart and young in spirit and so, God willing, healthy that the next 10 years you could still see all these places and do all these things.
Yes.
God willing.
I certainly hope so.
And I hope that Dawn Wells will certainly be doing more acting, more performing, more personal appearances, maybe a little, do any more TV or, you never did movies.
Sure, I've got a couple things in development now. My book comes out in September.
What is the name of the book?
Well, I'm not going to tell you yet. Call me in September.
Oh, would you love to be back on the program? We would
love to. I would love to, and I'd love to read a couple little things for you. It's fun writing. It really is fun writing.
To go about writing a book, did you have to set aside a certain period of time every morning? Were you disciplined like that, or was it just whenever something would occur to you? How was the process?
I take notes. I'm writing with somebody. I take notes, and then we interview each other, ask questions each other that we think each other would be interested in, and I think Mary Ann was the moral compass of the show.
Okay, yeah.
I think she held it together.
Well, I think the skipper also. He was good egg.
But I there was an optimism that she brought. You know, Gilligan, we could be bullying, and he did everything wrong every day, every minute. And it's a very interesting premise, and it's very interesting that it's lasted this long. There's a reason.
Well, do you think that reason is?
Well, I think it's a family out of the living room. It's no mother and father, but it's a group of misfits trying to get along and trying to look at the best side of everything. We all had little lessons to learn.
That's a really wonderful way of looking at it, like this new version of the extended family. And
I think so, and I think nowadays you'd have a multiracial.
Probably. Right, maybe
a gay person. I think you might bring in another 2 people to show the difference, but we all had to get along. We all had to, as simple as it is, you know, as silly and as simple as it is, it was a lesson, and it's amazing. It's amazing how many men say that Mary Ann was their first crush.
Oh, well.
Well, it wasn't because she was cute and hot shorts. It was...
That didn't hurt.
Your best friend. She would have been your best friend. Most fan mail, because a little girl would want to be your friend, too.
Yeah. Well, no, she was her best friend in hot shorts. I mean... If Margot Martindale were Marianne, she wouldn't necessarily have been the first crush. Yeah, just kidding. I threw a name out there. But you know what I'm saying. Hey, help that you are cute. And you are still cute. Wow, I don't even know where to go with that. I'm just rambling at this point, ladies and gentlemen. But...
We will do this again in September.
I'll have my thoughts clear again.
Okay.
And we will talk to the delightful and wonderful... And as you say, it's the real Marianne is your Facebook page, but you also have... What is your website?
DawnWells.com.
DawnWells.com. All's wells that ends wells. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, Dawn, for being in the neighborhood. You are a delight.
So are you, dear. Thanks a million. Have a great day.
You too. Shalom.
Shalom.